very well still be aware of everything, even trapped within their heads. But to break the spell upon them.
Yes,
Rhys said, eyes shining with something like guilt and shame. Some silent conversation passed between him and his mate, and Cassian knew Rhys was asking about the torture, apologizing for making Feyre witness even the 10 minutes Asriel had worked. But Feyre, Cassian knew, had been aware of what she'd see before entering, and well aware that these 10 minutes had only been the opening movements in a symphony of pain that Asriel could conduct with brutal efficiency. Feyre's face softened after a moment, and she offered Rhys a slight smile that made his eyes brighten. Rhys declared,
"They stay here, under guard. I'll contact Helion immediately."
Cassian asked,
"And Aerys? When do we tell him we found his soldiers, or what we did to most of them?"
"You acted in self-defense," Feyre said, arms crossing. "As far as I'm concerned, whoever was controlling the soldiers is to blame for their deaths, not you." Amarin added, "We'll tell Aerys once we verify everything. There's still a possibility that he's somehow behind this." Feyre nodded her approval, but her mouth tightened. "These two males have families who are surely worried about them. We should be as quick as possible." Cassian shut out the thought of all the males whom he hadn't left standing, who all had worried families as well. Every death had a weight, sent a ripple into the world, into time. It was too easy to forget that. He glanced to Az, but his brother's face was stone cold. If Az regretted what they'd done, he revealed no hint of it. Cassian sucked in his wings.
"We'll be as fast as we can."
They left the males in the room, blood still trickling down to the writhing beasts. Up they walked, out of the dungeons of the hewn city, out of the wretched place itself, until they stood amongst the moonstone pillars of the beautiful palace above it. Rhys aimed for the room with the mask. He opened the door and went stiff. Nesta sat at the table, staring at the cloth-covered mask.
"How did you get in here?"
Rhys asked, night swirling at his fingertips. Cassian knew his brother had made the wards on the door impenetrable, or they should have been. "The door was open," Nesta said numbly, and scanned their faces as if looking for someone. Cassian stepped into the room, and her eyes settled on him. He offered her a grim smile.
"The mask opened the door for you?"
Amarin demanded. "I found myself beckoned here," Nesta said, even as she looked Cassian over. Checking for injuries, he realized. She was looking to see if he was harmed, as if he were the one with a brutalized mouth, neck marked by claws, calves and shins lacerated. Her wounds had stopped bleeding, already scabbing, but Cauldron, damn him, he couldn't stand the sight of one bruise on her. "Does it speak to you?" Feyre asked, angling her head. Cassian had told them everything, as far as he'd been able to gather. Nesta had been attacked by a Kelpie, dragged under the water, and had somehow found the mask, summoned the dead of Urid to her to slay the Kelpie, and emerged triumphant. "Only a desperate fool would don that mask," Amarin said, keeping well away from the table. Whether it was to put distance between herself and Nesta, or to avoid the mask, he had no idea. "You're lucky to have been able to pry it from your face. Most of those who have worn it could never remove it. In order to sever it, they had to be beheaded. It's the cost of the power. You can raise an army of the dead to conquer the world, but you can never be free of the mask."
"I wished it to let go, and it did," Nesta said, surveying Amarin with cool disdain.
"Like calls to like," Rhys said. "Others could not free themselves because the mask did not recognize their power. The mask rode them, not the other way around. Only one made from the same dark source can wear the mask and not be ruled by it.
So Queen Briallen could use it,
Azriel said.
Perhaps that's why the Autumn Court soldiers were in Urid. She can't yet risk setting foot here, but she found a unit to go in for her.
The words rippled through the room. Nesta again stared at the mask.
It should be destroyed.
That's not possible, Amryn said. Perhaps if the cauldron had been truly destroyed, the mask might have been weakened enough for the High Lords and Feyre to join their power to do it.
If the cauldron had been destroyed, Feyre said with a shiver, then life would have ceased to exist.
So the mask remains, Amryn said wryly. It can only be dealt with, not eliminated.
We should dump it in the sea, then, Nesta said.
No taste for the living dead, girl? Amryn said.
Nesta slid her eyes toward Amryn in a way that had Cassian bracing for the worst.
No good can come from its power.
If we dump it in the sea, Azriel said, some wicked creature might find it. It's safer to keep it locked up with us.
Even if it can open doors and undo spells? Rhys asked.
Like calls to like, Feyre said into the puzzled quiet. Perhaps Nesta could ward it and lock the room, contain it.
I don't know how to do those spells, Nesta said. I failed at the most basic of them while training with Amryn, remember?
Feyre's head tilted to one side.
Is that what you think, Nesta? That you failed?
Nesta straightened, and Cassian's chest tightened at the wall that rose in her eyes, brick by brick. At the truth Nesta had let slip with that one word.
It doesn't matter,
she said, her old self rearing its head as her chin lifted.
Tell me how to do the spells, and I'll try.
She directed the last part to Amryn, to Rhys.
When Helion comes, Rhys said gently, as if he too understood what Nesta had revealed. I'll have him show you. He knows spells for warding that even I don't.
The silence became tense enough that Cassian made himself grin.
Considering that Nesta brushed off Helion's smoldering advances during the war, he might not be so inclined to help her.
He'll help, Rhys said, stars shimmering in his gaze, if only for another shot at her.
Nesta rolled her eyes, and the gesture was so normal that Cassian's smile became more genuine, edged now with relief.
You wear your heart for all to see, brother, Rhys said without turning Cassian's way.
Cassian only shrugged. He was past caring. Feyre said to Nesta,
we should get Maja to tend to your wounds.
They're healing already, Nesta said. And Cassian wondered if she had any idea how awful she looked. Indeed, Amryn said, you look like a cat tried to eat your face off. She sniffed.
And you smell like a swamp.
Being dragged through a bog will do that to you,
Cassian said to Amryn, earning a surprised look from Nesta.
He asked her, how did the Kelpie snare you?
Nesta's scratched up throat bobbed. I grew nervous when you, both of you, didn't come back.
The silence in the room was palpable.
I went to find you.
Cassian didn't dare say that he'd only been gone 30 minutes. 30 minutes! And she'd been in a panic like that?
We wouldn't have left you,
he said carefully.
I wasn't afraid of being left. I was afraid both of you were dead.
That she kept emphasizing both of you tightened his chest. He knew what she was carefully avoiding saying. She'd been worried enough that she'd ventured into Urid's perils for him. Nesta turned from his stare.
I was about to go into the water when the Kelpie appeared. It crawled onto the bank, spoke to me, and then dragged me in.
It spoke to you? Rhys asked.
Not in a language I knew.
Rhys's mouth quirked to the side.
Can you show me?
Nesta frowned, as if unwilling to relive the memory. but nodded. Both of their gazes went vacant, and then Rhys pulled back.
That thing!
He surveyed Nesta with blatant shock that she had survived. Rhys turned to Amryn.
Have a listen.
Their eyes became glazed, and none of them spoke as Rhys showed Amryn. Even Amryn's face paled at whatever Rhys showed her, and then she was shaking her head, her black bob of hair swaying. That is a dialect of our tongue that has not been spoken in 15,000 years.
I could only pick up every other word,
Rhys said. Feyre arched a brow. You speak the language of the ancient Fae? Rhys shrugged.
My education was thorough.
He waved an idle, graceful hand.
For exactly these situations.
Azriel asked,
What did the Kelpie say?
Amryn shot an alarmed glance at Nesta, then answered. He said, Are you my sacrifice, sweet flesh? How pale and young you are. Tell me, are they resuming the sacrifices to the waters once more? And when she didn't respond, the Kelpie said, No gods can save you. I shall take you, little beauty, and you shall be my bride before you are my supper.
Nesta's hand drifted to the marks on her face, then recoiled. Horror slid through Cassian, then molten rage.
People used to sacrifice to Kelpies? Feyre asked, nose crinkling with disgust and dread.
Yes,
Amryn said, scowling. The most ancient Fae and humans believed Kelpies to be river and lake gods, though I always wondered if the sacrifices started as a way to prevent the Kelpies from hunting them, keep them fed and happy, control the deaths, and they wouldn't crawl out of the water to snatch the children. Her teeth flashed. For this one to still be speaking that ancient dialect?
He must have retreated to Urid a long time ago.
Or been raised by parents who spoke that dialect?
Azriel countered.
No,
Amryn said.
The Kelpies do not breed. They rape and torment, but they do not reproduce. They were made, legend says, by the hand of a cruel god, and deposited throughout the waters of this land. The Kelpie you slew, girl, was perhaps one of the last.
Nesta gazed at the mask again. Rhys said,
It flew to you, the mask.
He must have seen it in her head.
I was trying to reach for my power,
Nesta murmured, and they all stilled. She'd never spoken of her power so explicitly.
This answered instead.
Like calls to like, Feyre repeated. Your power and the mask's are similar enough that to reach for one was to reach for the other.
So, you admit your powers remain then?
Amryn said dryly.
Nesta met her stare. You already knew that.
Cassian stepped in before things went south.
All right, let Lady Death get some rest.
That's not funny,
Nesta hissed. Cassian winked, even as the others tensed.
I think it's catchy.
Nesta glowered, but it was a human expression, and he'd take that any day over that silver fire, over the being who had walked on water and commanded a legion of the dead. He wondered if Nesta would agree. Nesta stayed at the Moonstone Palace atop the Hewn City. Feyre had suggested that the bright openness would be better than the dim red halls of the House of Wind, at least for tonight. Nesta had been too tired to disagree, to explain that the house was her friend, and would have pampered and fussed like an old nursemaid. She barely noted the opulent bedroom, overhanging the side of the mountain, snow-capped peaks gleaming in the sunshine all around, a bed piled with glowingly white linens and pillows and, well, she did notice the sunken bathing pool, open to the air beyond, water spilling over the lip that projected above the drop and trickling into the endless fall below. Ribbons of steam snaked along its surface, inviting and scented with lavender, and she had enough presence of mind to strip off her clothes and climb in before sullying the sheets again. They'd already been changed since she'd slept earlier. She knew because she'd left a great muddy imprint on the bed when she'd arisen, and now it was pristine. Nesta eased into the bath, grimacing as the water stung her wounds. Beyond the peaks, the sun shifted from white gold to yellow, sinking toward the earth's embrace. Fat, fluffy clouds drifted by, filled with peach-colored light, lovely against the purpling sky. Her fingers rose to her hair, and as she dragged her hands through the tangled, still-sodden mess, she watched the sky transform itself into the most beautiful sunset she'd ever beheld. Bits of bogweed and mud cracked out of her hair, whisked away by the water over the edge of the pool. Sighing, Nesta slid under, her face stinging, and scrubbed at her scalp. She emerged, her hair still thick and gritty, and scanned the wall next to the pool. There, vials of what had to be concoctions for washing one's body and hair. She poured a dollop into her hands, her nose filling with the scent of mint and rosemary, and scrubbed it through her hair. She let the heady scent pull the tension from her as much as it could, and lathered her heavy locks. Another dunk under the water had her rinsing out the bubbles. When she emerged, she reached for the bar of soap that smelled of sweet almonds. Nesta washed every part of herself twice, and only when she finished did she let herself take in the view again. The sunset was at its peak, the sky ablaze with pink and blue and gold and purple, and she willed it to fill her, to clear away any lingering trace of Urid's darkness. She had never experienced anything like the mask's power. The Kelpie, at least, had felt real. Her terror and anger and desperation had all been human, ordinary feelings. As soon as she'd donned the mask, those feelings had vanished. She had become more, had become something that did not need air to breathe, something that did not understand hate or love or fear or grief. It had scared her more than anything else, that utter lack of feeling. How good it had felt to be so removed. Nesta swallowed. She hadn't confessed it to any of them. She'd been contemplating the mask when they'd found her in its room, contemplating that void, wondering whether anyone had ever donned the mask, not to raise the dead, but to simply stop being inside their own minds. She had been aware, yes, had killed the Kelpie because she wished it dead, but all the weight, the echoing thoughts, the hatred and guilt that sliced her like knives, they had vanished. And it had been so seductive, so freeing and lovely, that she'd known the mask had to be destroyed, if only to save herself from it. But it could not be destroyed. And she was the sole person who might contain it. Never mind that, for the same reason, she'd be the sole person with access to it. Everyone else would be safe from its temptation and power, except for her, the one who most needed to be barred from it. A knock sounded on her door, and Nesta dropped below the dark surface of the pool, letting her long hair cover her breasts, before she said, "Yes?" Cassian strode in, a tray of food in hand, and halted when he didn't see her on the bed. His eyes shot to the sunken pool, and she could have sworn he almost dropped the tray onto the white carpet. His loss of words was enough to pull her from her thoughts, to curve the corners of her mouth upward. "Me?" He shook his head like a wet dog. "I brought some food. I assumed you'd want dinner."
"There's no dining room?"
"There is, but I thought you might need to unwind."
She surveyed him,
surprised that he knew her well enough to guess that the thought of speaking to everyone again, of dressing in suitable clothes, was draining, miserable. Knew her well enough to grasp that she'd rather eat in her room and piece herself together. Cassian cleared his throat.
I'll put it over there.
He jerked his chin to the desk next to the bathtub's far edge, where the water tumbled off the mountain. Nesta pivoted as he strode a shade stiffly to the desk and set down the tray.
Right. He cleared his throat again. Enjoy your bath and the meal.
Seeing Cassian so flustered pushed away the shadows in her heart. Thoughts of the mask became a distant rumble. Do you want to get in? He sucked in a breath, but something like pain washed over his features.
You're hurt.
Nesta stood, water sluicing off her, her hair plastering to her breasts, and doing nothing to hide her peaked nipples beneath. Do I look injured to you? He nodded toward the scabbed cuts all over her body, her face.
Yes?
She snorted. It looks worse than it feels by now. Cassian didn't reply, his chest rising and falling in a sharp rhythm. With each uneven lift, she began to throb between her legs, as if her body answered his own.
Yes, her body seemed to say. This, him. Life to drive away the mask, life to drive away the horror of Urid.
The need to touch him, feel his warmth and strength, pounded through her. If he wouldn't climb into the bath, then she'd have to go to him. Nesta waded toward the steps of the sunken tub, and Cassian went rigid. He whispered,
I thought you were dead today.
Nesta reached the stairs. So did I. She stepped upward, exposing her midriff. I thought you were dead, too.
You must have been happy.
She smiled, watching his gaze drop with every piece of her revealed. Another step upward had her sex bared to him. It did not make me happy. She reached the floor of the room. Through what Nesta knew was 500 years of will, Cassian lifted his focus to her face as she walked to him, water dripping off her body.
You want to do this? He breathed.
Yes. She stopped a foot away, her wet hair draped along her torso, and stared up into his face. His eyes burned like hazel stars. Nesta gave him a smile that was pure fey. Just sex. The words seemed to spark something because Cassian blinked.
Right, just sex.
He didn't say it as lightly as she did, and still didn't reach for her. So she said, there can be nothing more than sex, Cassian. His jaw tightened. And he seemed to struggle with some internal battle before he said darkly,
Then I'll take whatever you offer me.
He leaned in, his body still not touching hers, and said against her ear,
And I'll take you however you wish me to.
Her toes curled on the stones, her hair dripping. And if I wish to take you? He smiled against her ear.
Then I'll beg you to ride me into oblivion.
She went molten, and from the way his wings tucked in, she knew he could scent the wetness building between her thighs. Cassian gently pulled her wet hair from her breasts. Her breathing came in sharp pants as he traced the tip of a finger around her nipple, then did it again. Words eluded her. She couldn't remember any of them. Couldn't remember anything except that one finger circling her nipple, her entire body throbbing with need. Cassian flicked her nipple, a hard, sharp bite that made her whimper. Desperate for more of him, for all of him, Nesta said,
Do what you want.
He circled her nipple again, a predator playing with its dinner.
That doesn't sound very exciting. Do what you want?
He clamped her nipple between his thumb and forefinger, the demand in it enough that she looked up at his face. He was the portrait of male arrogance, a warrior poised to conquer, and she nearly climaxed at the sight of it. His eyes darkened.
The way you sometimes look at me makes me think such filthy things, Nesta.
Do them. Do all of them. He pinched her nipple just short of drawing pain, and she arched into a touch, a silent plea for more, for him to unleash himself.
We don't have time in one night for all the things I want to do to you, with you, every place I want to touch and fill you.
She rubbed her thighs together, desperate for any friction. Then do your best. Cassian laughed darkly, but his other hand came up to her untouched breast, circling as well. She watched his light brown fingers play against her pale skin, watched him touch her like he wanted to map every inch of her body and had all the time in the world to do it. Below his waist, she could just make out his hardness. Do you want to suck me again? He whispered against her ear. Do you want me down your throat again? Nesta let out a confirming whimper.
Did you still taste me days later?
She couldn't answer, couldn't reveal the truth. His fingers clamped on her nipples, drawing just enough pain that she went wholly wet.
Did you?
Yes, I tasted you for days. The words tumbled out, and with them, clarity and hunger sharpened her focus, ripped her from that needy daze. I've thought about your cock in my mouth every night since, while I had my hand between my legs.
He growled, and she skimmed a hand against his hardness, squeezing.
She lifted her head and met his darkened stare, baring her teeth. I thought about your head between my legs, too, she said, heart thundering, and how your tongue slid into me. She squeezed him again. Cassian groaned, and his thumbs caressed her two sensitive nipples. Nesta put her other hand on his chest, backing him toward the bed, and he went willingly, letting her set the pace, the location.
I promised you that you could fuck me wherever you wanted in the house, she said,
her voice a deep, rolling purr that she barely recognized. The backs of his thighs hit the bed, and he halted her, one hand dropping to her waist to steady them.
But this isn't the house. His breathing rasped around them as she smiled up at his drawn, taut features. So, I think that means we'll fuck wherever I want.
Cassian grinned, and the hand at her waist swept down to cup her bare ass. He squeezed one cheek.
As long as I still get to fuck you in the house.
She met his savage grin.
Good.
His hand drifted further south, between her legs, feeling her from behind. His fingers brushed against the wetness pooled there, and he swore, drawing his hand back, holding it between them. Her wetness gleamed on his two fingers, and his eyes glittered with predatory intent as he lifted them to his mouth and licked them, one by one. Her body ached, clamping around emptiness, desperate for something to fill it, for him to fill it. She stroked her fingers down the length of his cock, still trapped within his pants. And as she made a second pass, he slanted his mouth over hers. It was a grazing, taunting kiss. She bit his lower lip. And then he was grabbing her to him, crushing their bodies together, both hands now gripping her ass as he pressed her against his length. Their open mouths clashed and met, and she tasted herself on his tongue, her fingers grappling in his silken hair, dragging against his scalp. Cassian twisted, flipping them, and then she was lying flat against the mattress as he stood before her. He tore his mouth away as he propped her legs on the bed, folding them at the knees, as he tugged her to the mattress's edge so that her sex was on display for him. He knelt, wings rising above him, and dragged his tongue clean up her center. Nesta moaned at the same moment he did, and he let her writhe, as if he knew it'd torment her more to undulate, but to have nothing to fill her. Not until he wished it. He gave her another savoring lick, lingering at the apex of her thighs, sucking the bundle of nerves into his mouth, nipping with his teeth, before he began again. Again, again. He was devouring her, melting her body like a piece of chocolate on his tongue. She couldn't endure it, and she clasped her own breast, desperate for more touch, more sensation. He looked up from between her legs and marked her hand kneading her breast, marked it and smiled, his teeth flashing white against the flushed gleam of her. "Do you like seeing me kneel before you?" he asked, the words rumbling to her very core. He dipped his tongue into her. "You taste like you do." Nesta arched, thrusting herself further onto his tongue, but Cassian only laughed against her and denied her what she wished. He gave her another slow, slow lick from base to top, and as he reached that bundle of nerves, he slid two fingers into her. Two, not one. Because he seemed to know she was already waiting for him, that she wanted him unbound and rough and wild. She bowed off the bed, and he thrust his fingers in again, his breathing uneven as he said, "How do you want it?" He pumped his hand into her again, wringing out her reply. "Hard," she gasped. "Thank the mother," he swore, and she heard metal clicking and leather whispering. And then his tongue caressed her again, past that bundle of nerves, up her stomach to her breasts, until he was over her. Cassian moved her further onto the bed. She didn't care that her legs fell open for him, only that he was now naked, and all that rippling muscle and golden skin gleamed above her. He lowered himself to the cradle of her thighs, and his eyes were so wide she could see the whites around them. He opened his mouth, but she didn't want to hear the words, didn't want to know whatever he'd been about to say. She framed his face in her hands and kissed him savagely, her tongue scraping over his teeth as she ground their mouths together. The broad tip of his cock nudged at her entrance, slipping in the slickness there, and he reached down to guide himself in. At Cassian's first prod into her body, fire erupted within her. She panted into his mouth, nipping at his bottom lip as he eased himself in. Just an inch. He halted. He was large enough that the stretching was edged in sweetest pain. Large enough that she wondered if she'd be able to fit all of him. He trembled, holding himself barely inside her, as if he were now wondering the same. His hesitation, his care, melted some ice-cold shard within her and made her snap free of any restraint. Nesta gripped his ass, muscles flexing beneath her fingertips, and hauled him into her. Only another inch. Only another inch because Cassian braced his arms against the bed, hips pulling against her hold. "I'll hurt you. I don't care." She ran her tongue over his jaw. "I do," he ground out, body straining as she attempted to pull him into her. "Nesta." Her fingers dug in again, her very blood and bones crying out for more of him, but he refused to move. "Nesta, look at me." Fighting the roaring of her body, she obeyed. Heat blazed in his eyes, and something more than that.
Look at me.
Cassian breathed. Gods spare her, but she did. She couldn't take her gaze off him. Found herself free-falling into his darkened eyes, his beautiful face. His hips flexed, and he slid in another inch, then retreated nearly to her edge. Their breathing synced, and Nesta stilled beneath him, a feeling of utter calm, utter fullness spreading through her as his hips moved again, and he pushed back in, a little farther this time. Cassian held her gaze through each small thrust, each retreat. He stretched her, filling her inch by inch. And Nesta knew he'd been right to go slow for this first joining. Retreating and advancing, Cassian filled her. They said nothing, only shared breath, their eyes wide as they gazed at each other. He pulled outward again. The movement long enough this time that she knew he was nearly all the way in. He halted, his cock barely inside her, and studied her face. A conquering warrior god. He had called her Lady Death, and he was her sword. Cassian leaned down to kiss her, and as his tongue slid into her mouth, he thrust home in a mighty final push. Nesta moaned as he slammed to the hilt, and the full impact of him hit her, stretched her, and she couldn't breathe fast enough. Cassian withdrew again and slammed back into her, propelling their bodies farther onto the bed. He groaned this time, and the sound was her undoing. She wrapped her legs around his back, careful of his wings, and lifted her hips to meet his. He sank even deeper, and she dug her nails into his shoulders. Gods! Nothing had ever felt so good, so full, so burning with pleasure. Nothing had ever felt like this. Nothing! Cassian set the pace, smooth and deep, and for a moment, it was all Nesta could do to match him stroke for stroke. For a moment, she looked between their bodies to where his cock plunged into her, so thick and long and gleaming with her that she tightened around him, her release already building. He felt her inner muscles squeeze him harder and growled, "Fuck, Nesta!" And she liked seeing him undone, enough that she did it again, clenching on him just as he seated himself fully. He arched into it, fingers digging into the bed. "Fuck," he repeated. It wasn't enough, though. It wasn't close to enough. She wanted Cassian roaring, wanted him so lost that he couldn't remember his own name. Nesta halted him with a hand on his chest, just one hand, and he stopped, utterly at her command. If she wanted to end it here, it would. It softened her enough that she couldn't quite keep the tremor out of her voice as she said, "I want you deeper." Cassian panted, eyes wild. She crawled out of his arms. As she turned onto her stomach and lifted her backside for him, offering herself, he made a low sound of need. She arched her hips higher, inviting him to take, to feast. His restraint shattered. He was on her in a second, lifting her hips higher as he sheathed himself in a single thrust. Nesta screamed then, a sound of such pleasure she knew it echoed off the mountains, feeling him hit the deepest spot of her. Cassian pounded into her, a hand moving from her hip to her hair, tugging her head back, baring her throat. She gave herself over to it, to him, and the lack of control was heady, so pleasurable that she could barely stand it. He thrust harder, so deep with this angle that she might have been screaming again, might have been sobbing. His other hand drifted between her legs, his cock pounding into her, her hair gripped like reins in one hand, her pleasure in his other. She was utterly at his mercy, and he knew it. He was snarling with desire, slamming home so hard his balls slapped against her.
The silken touch had her erupting. Her climax crashed upon her, out of her, her inner muscles clenching him tight. Cassian roared, the sound echoing through the room, and he became utterly wild as release found him, and he spilled into her with such force that his seed ran down her thighs. And then his weight fell upon her back, and only an arm that he threw out to brace them kept them from collapsing. Reeling, Nesta could only breathe, breathe, breathe. Cassian lay buried in her, and it felt so good, so right, that she wanted him always this deep in her, his seed spilling down her legs forever. "Oh, gods," he whispered against her spine, over the tattoo inked along it. "That was... I know," she panted. "I know." It was as much as she'd confess, as much as she'd let herself admit. Too good. It had felt too good, and nothing and no one would ever compare to it. He said, voice shaking, "I've made a mess of you." She buried her face in the blanket. "I like it." Cassian went still, but he gently extracted himself from her in a long, long pull. He dragged his seed with him, and another rush of it trickled down her thighs, dripping on the blanket as he pulled out fully. She didn't move, couldn't move, didn't want to move. She felt him kneeling behind her, staring at the ass she still held upward, the view it presented. "I shouldn't enjoy seeing that so much," he growled. Her breasts tightened, but she asked coyly, "Seeing what?" "You, covered in me, that beautiful sex of yours." She blushed and lowered her body to the mattress. "No one has ever called it beautiful."
"It is. It's the most beautiful I've ever seen."
She smiled into the blanket. "Liar."
"I'm beyond lies right now, Nesta."
His voice was so rough, she looked over a shoulder. Cassian still knelt, and his face, it was utterly devastated, as if she'd taken him apart and left him in ruin. "What is it?" she asked, but he moved off the bed and reached for his fallen clothes. Nesta twisted, her legs and core drenched in his essence and hers. But he donned his pants, gathering up his shirt and jacket, and the weapons she hadn't realized he'd carried. When he lifted his head, he threw her a wicked smile.
"Just sex, right?"
It was a trap somehow. She couldn't discern in what way, but the words were dangerous. She'd meant them, though, or had wanted to, at least. So Nesta said, "Right." His eyes flickered and he grinned again, aiming for the door.
"Thanks for the ride, Ness."
He winked and was gone. She stared at the door, puzzling over his exit, so swift that his seed still leaked out of her. Was it punishment? Had he not enjoyed it? She had the proof of his enjoyment between her legs, but males could find their pleasure and still not deem it good. Was he trying to demonstrate what she'd done to all those males? Bedded them and then kicked them out? She'd said just sex, but had thought it might at least come with some cuddling. A few minutes to enjoy the feel of his body against hers before pride made her order him to leave. Nesta knelt in the bed and stared at the door, the silence her only answer. Chapter 38.
"You took him to your bed, didn't you?"
Emery's whispered question had Nesta whipping her head toward her, stomach muscles quivering as she held the upward positioning of her curl. Emery, a mirror image to her left, simply smirked at the shock on Nesta's face.
Gwyn, on Emery's other side, was just as wide-eyed. Nesta schooled her features into neutrality and uncurled to the ground, making sure to hold her abdominal muscles tight until her back was flat against the stone once more.
Why would you say that?
Because you and Cassian have been exchanging sultry looks all morning.
Nesta scowled at Emery.
We have not.
It was an effort not to look across the ring to where Cassian was now walking the newest group of priestesses, two this time, Ilana and Lorelei, through foot positioning and balance. Nesta had, in fact, caught him staring her way twice since the lesson had begun 2 hours ago, but she'd made a point not to engage in lingering eye contact.
You have,
Gwyn whispered, low enough that Cassian's fey hearing wouldn't pick up her words. Nesta rolled her eyes.
Well, if you won't talk about that, Emery said with equal quiet, then at least tell us what happened yesterday, why there was no lesson, and where you were in the afternoon.
I was asked to keep it a secret, Nesta said. Her wounds had healed and vanished already, making it easy to do so.
It has something to do with the trove,
Gwyn said, those teal eyes noticing too much. Nesta didn't reply, and that was answer enough. Emery knew the basics, as much as Gwyn had been told, and frowned. But she kept her voice whisper soft.
So, you really didn't sleep with him?
Nesta did another curl, torso rising to her knees. I didn't say that. Emery let out a, Nesta's cheeks flushed. Emery and Gwyn swapped glances, and it was Gwyn who said,
was it good?
Nesta did another curl, and Cassian barked from across the ring.
Emery, Gwyn, if you can do those curls as well as you run your mouths, you'd be done by now.
Emery and Gwyn grinned fiendishly.
Sorry,
they shouted, and launched into motion. Nesta grew still as Cassian's gaze met hers. The space between them went taut, the sounds of exercising priestesses fading into nothing. The sky an azure blur above, the wind a distant caress on her cheeks.
You too, Archeron,
he ordered, pointing to where Emery and Gwyn now exercised, apparently doing their best not to laugh.
Do another 15.
Nesta threw a scowl at all of them and began her curls again. That was why she'd been avoiding eye contact with him. Cassian's attention slid elsewhere. But with each curl upward, Nesta found herself reining in the urge to gaze his way. She lost count 3 times.
Bastard.
Between curls, Gwyn said, you know, Nesta, if you're having trouble concentrating.
Oh, please,
Nesta muttered. Gwyn let out a breathy laugh.
I mean it. I learned about a new Valkyrie technique last night. It's called mind-stilling.
Nesta managed to ask, body screeching with the effort of the curls.
What is it?
They used it to steady their minds and emotions. Some of them did it 3 or 4 times a day. But it's basically the act of sitting and letting your mind go quiet. It might help with your concentration. Emery snickered, but Nesta paused, ignoring Gwyn's implication.
Such a thing is possible? To train the mind?
Gwyn halted her exercising, too. Her teasing smile turned contemplative.
Well, yes. It requires constant practice, but there's a whole chapter in this book I summarized for Merrill about how they did it. It involved deep breathing and becoming aware of one's body, then learning to let go. They used it to remain calm in the face of their fears, to settle themselves after a hard battle, and to fight whatever inner demons they possessed.
Illyrian warriors do no such thing, Emery murmured. Their heads are full of rage and battle. It's only gotten worse since the last war, now that they're rebuilding their ranks. The Valkyries found heightened emotions distracting in the face of an opponent, Gwyn said. They trained their minds to be weapons as sharp as any blade, to be able to keep their composure, to know how to access that place of calm in the midst of battle.
made them unshakable opponents. Nesta's heart pounded with every word, quieting her mind. Can you get a scribe to make copies of the chapter? Gwyn grinned.
I already did.
Cassian barked.
Do you three want to gossip or train?
Nesta threw him a scathing look.
Don't tell him of this, she warned them. It's our secret.
And wouldn't Cassian be surprised when she became the unflappable one? Emery and Gwyn nodded their agreement as Cassian sauntered over. Every muscle, every bit of blood and bone in Nesta's body went on alert. She'd returned to the house this morning, winnowed in by a too neutral Rhys. Cassian had been nowhere in sight. She'd had all of 30 minutes to eat breakfast and change into her spare leathers, since the ones she'd worn in the bog were still soaked. The pair she'd donned were bigger, not baggy, but just slightly bigger. She hadn't noticed how tight her usual set was until she slid into the far more comfortable ones. Hadn't noticed how much muscle she'd packed onto her thighs and arms this month, until she realized her movements had been restricted by the old pair. Cassian paused before them, hands on his hips.
Is there something more interesting today than your training?
He knew. The bastard knew they'd been discussing him. The spark in his eye, the half-grin, told her. Emery's lips quivered with the effort to keep from smiling.
Not at all.
Gwyn's attention bounced between Nesta and Cassian. Cassian said to the priestess,
Yes?
Gwyn shook her head too quickly to be innocent and began her abdominal curls again, sweat gleaming on her freckled face. Emery joined her. The two of them working so diligently that it was laughable. Nesta peered up at Cassian.
What?
His eyes danced with wicked amusement.
Did you finish your set?
Yes.
And the push-ups?
Yes.
He stepped closer and she couldn't help but think of how he'd approached last night, the way those hands had grasped her hips as he'd pounded into her from behind. Something must have shone on her face, because he said in a low voice,
You've certainly been productive, Ness.
She swallowed and knew the two females beside her were eating up every word, but she lifted her chin.
When do we do something of use? When do we start on archery or swords?
You think you're ready to handle a sword?
Emery let out a fizzing noise but kept working. Nesta refused to smile, to blush, and said without breaking Cassian's stare,
Only you can tell me that.
His nostrils flared.
Get up.
Cassian had told himself 24 times since walking out of that bedroom that the sex had been a mistake. But watching Nesta challenge him, the innuendo like a sizzling flame, he couldn't for the life of him remember why. Something to do with her only wanting sex. Something to do with the sex being the best damn sex he'd ever had. And how it had left him in veritable pieces. Nesta blinked.
What?
He nodded toward the center of the pit.
You heard me. You think you're ready to handle a sword? Then prove it.
Her friends were clearly aware of what they'd done last night. Emery couldn't even hide her laughing, and Gwyn kept sneaking looks at them. He barked at the two females.
Finish your exercises now or do double.
They stopped their gawking. Nesta was still staring up at him, sweat and exertion filling that beautiful face of hers with color. A bead of perspiration slid down her temple, and he had to clench his fists to keep from leaning in to lick it away. She asked,
We're going to learn swords?
He aimed for the rack across the ring, and she followed.
We're going to start with wooden practice swords. Over my rotting corpse am I putting actual steel into the hands of novices.
She snickered, and he stiffened.
He tossed over a shoulder. If you're too childish to talk of blades without giggling, then you're not ready for sword play.
She scowled, but Cassian said,
These are weapons of death.
He let his voice lift so all the females could hear him, though he spoke only to her.
They need to be treated with a healthy dose of respect. I didn't even touch a real sword for the first 7 years.
7 years? Gwyn demanded behind them. He reached the rack and drew out a long blade, a near replica of the Illyrian one down his back.
You think children should be swinging around a real sword?
No, Gwyn sputtered. I just meant, do you plan for us to practice with wooden swords for 7 years?
If you three keep giggling, then yes,
Nesta said to Gwyn and Emery.
Don't let him bully you.
Cassian snorted.
Dangerous words for a female about to go head to head with me.
She rolled her eyes, but hesitated when he extended the practice sword to her hilt first. It's heavy, she observed as she took its full weight.
The real sword weighs more.
Nesta glanced to his shoulder, where the hilt of his blade peeked over. Really?
Yes.
He nodded to her hands.
Double-handed grip on the hilt. Don't choke up too close to the shaft.
Emery began coughing, and Nesta's mouth twitched, but she held it, fought it. Even Cassian had to tamp down a laugh before he cleared his throat. But Nesta did as he bade.
Feet where I showed you, he said,
well aware of every eye on them. From the way Nesta's face turned grave, Cassian knew she was aware, too, that this moment with these priestesses watching was pivotal somehow. Vital. Nesta met Cassian's stare, and every thought of sex, of how good it had felt, eddied from her head as she lifted the blade before her. It was like a key sliding into a lock at last. It was a wooden sword, and yet it wasn't. It was a part of practice, and yet it wasn't. Cassian walked her through 8 different cuts and blocks. Each was an individual move, he'd explained, and like the punches, they could be combined. The most difficult thing was to remember to lead with the hilt of the sword and to use her entire body, not just her arms.
Block 1, he ordered,
and she lifted the sword perpendicular to her body, raising upward against an invisible enemy.
Slice 3,
she rotated the blade, reminding herself to lead with the stupid hilt, and slashed downward at an angle.
Thrust 1.
Another pivot, and she lunged forward, slamming the blade through the breastplate of an imaginary enemy. Everyone had stopped to watch.
Block 3,
Cassian commanded. Nesta switched to a one-handed grip, her left hand coming up to her chest, where he'd told her to hold it. That would be her shield hand, he'd said, and learning to keep it tucked close would be key to her survival.
Slice 2.
She dragged the sword in a straight line upward, slitting that enemy from groin to sternum.
Block 2.
She pivoted on 1 foot, dragging the sword away from the enemy's chest to intercept another invisible blow. None of her movements possessed any semblance of his elegance or power. They were stilted, and it took her a second to remember each of the steps. But she told herself that would take more than 30 minutes of instruction.
Cassian had reminded her of that often enough. Good.
He crossed his arms.
Block 1, slice 3, thrust 2.
She did so. The movements flowed faster, surer. Her breath clicked into sync with her body with each thrust.
Good, Nesta. Again.
She could see the muddy battlefield and hear the screams of friend and foe alike. Each movement was a fight for survival, for victory.
Again.
She could see the King of Hybern, and the Cauldron, and the Ravens, see the Kelpie, and Thomas, and all those people who had sneered at the Archeron's poverty and desperation, the friends who had walked away with smiles on their faces. Her arm was a distant ache, secondary to that building song in her blood. It felt good. It felt so, so good. Cassian threw out different combinations, and she obeyed, let them flow through her. Every hated enemy, every moment she'd been powerless against them, simmered to the surface. And with each movement of the sword, each breath, a thought formed. It echoed with every inhale, every thrust and block. Never again. Never again would she be weak. Never again would she be at someone's mercy. Never again would she fail. Never again, never again, never again. Cassian's voice stopped, and then the world paused, and all that existed was him, his fierce smile, as if he knew what song roared in her blood, as if he alone understood that the blade was an instrument to channel this raging fire in her. The other females were utterly silent. Their hesitation and shock shimmered in the air. Slowly, Nesta broke her stare from Cassian and looked to Emery and Gwyn, already moving across the ring. Cassian had the wooden swords ready by the time they arrived. No fear shone in their eyes, as if they too saw what Cassian did, as if they too heard those words within Nesta's head. Never again. Chapter 39. The fire inside her didn't stop. Nesta could barely get through her work in the library that afternoon, thanks to that fire, that bouncing energy. By the time the clock chimed six, she bade Clotho farewell and went straight to the outside stairwell. Down and down, around and around and around, step to step to step, she didn't stop, couldn't stop, as if she'd been freed from a cage she hadn't realized she'd been held in. Every step downward, she heard the words, "Never again." She had escaped the Kelpie by pure luck, but she'd been terrified. As terrified as when she'd been hauled into the depths of the cauldron. As terrified as she'd been with Thomas. At least with Thomas she'd fought. With the Kelpie, she had barely done anything until the mask had spared her. She had become so afraid, so meek and trembling. It was unacceptable, unacceptable that she had let herself balk and cower and curl inward. Down and down, around and around and around, step to step to step, never again, never ever again. Nesta reached the 6,000th step and began the ascent. The first of the autumnal rains arrived the next day, and Cassian half expected the priestesses not to show up for practice. But they were already waiting in the cold and wet when he entered the training ring. None bothered to use magic to keep dry, as if they wanted the grit, the extra effort. In the center of the group stood Nesta, her eyes already focused. Cassian's blood heated, unable to keep his desire contained at the sight of that fierceness in her face, the eagerness to learn more, push harder. He hadn't sought her out last night, deciding to sleep at the river house rather than risk temptation. The sex had been that good, and he knew if he didn't put up some semblance of a barrier, it'd consume him entirely. She'd consume him entirely. Nesta, Emery, and Gwyn stood together, and there were three new priestesses today. "Ladies," he said by way of greeting, surveying the 11 soaked females waiting like troops to be commanded on a battlefield. Rosalind had removed her hood, revealing a head of deep red hair and pale skin over delicate features. Her eyes were the color of caramel. And if she was afraid to be revealing her face at last, she did not let on. Cassian surveyed the rest of the lineup, and, well, that was new. Gwyn was in Illyrian leathers, Nesta's old ones from the scent of them. Cassian observed them, all clear-eyed and eager. "I think we need another tutor." The next morning, though the females were hesitant around a newcomer, Asriel kept so aloof and quiet that they quickly relaxed around him. Az had readily agreed to squeeze in the lessons before heading out to keep an eye on Briallen. Cassian continued to train Nesta, Emery, and Gwyn. The rain didn't let up, and they were all soaked, but the exertion kept the bite of the cold away.
"So this can really down a male in one move?"
Gwyn asked Cassian as he stood before Nesta.
They'd taken a break from the swords to stretch their hands. But rather than sit idle and have their bodies go stiff with inactivity, he'd shown them a few techniques to get out of a pinch. Gwyn had been distracted today, one eye on the other side of the ring. Cassian could only assume she was watching his brother, who had given Gwyn a small smile of greeting upon arrival. Gwyn hadn't returned it. Cassian cursed himself for a fool. He should have asked her if she'd be comfortable with Asriel here. Perhaps he should have asked all the priestesses about including another male, but especially Gwyn, whom Asriel had found that day in Sangreval. She'd said nothing about it during the lesson, only glanced every now and then toward Az, who remained dutifully focused on his charges. Cassian couldn't read the expression on her face. He concentrated on the females in front of him.
This move will knock anyone unconscious if you hit the right spot.
Cassian took Nesta's hand, placing it on his neck. Her fingers were so small against his, and freezing cold. He might have run his thumb over the back of her hand before he positioned her fingers.
You want to go for this pressure point. Hit it hard enough, you'll make them drop like a stone.
Nesta's fingers tightened, and he grabbed her hand. But she smirked, as if knowing she'd caught him. He squeezed her chilled fingers.
I know you were thinking of it.
I'd never do such a thing, she said mildly, her eyes dancing. Cassian winked, and Nesta slid her hand from his neck.
All right, he said. Back to swords. Who wants to show me the 8 points again?
Despite changing their clothes, Nesta and Gwyn remained chilled to the bone an hour after their lesson had finished. Nestled in a warm, comfortable nook in a rarely visited part of the library, Nesta sipped at her peppermint tea, letting its warmth soak through her body as she read through the chapter Gwyn had copied. She'd given one to Emery before their friend had left, getting a promise from the Illyrian that she'd practice tonight and they'd compare notes tomorrow. So it's really that easy? Nesta asked, setting down the papers on the worn couch cushion. Gwyn, seated on the opposite end of the couch, stretched her feet toward the fire, robes rustling. It certainly seems easy, but according to everything I've read, it's not.
This says, you just sit somewhere comfortable and quiet, close your eyes, breathe a whole lot, and let your mind go.
I'm telling you, it took the Valkyries months to learn the basics, and mastering it required doing these exercises multiple times a day. But let's try it. It says at the end of this chapter that if we're doing this for the first time, we might grow sleepy, or even fall asleep during it. But learning to fight the urge to sleep is for further down the road.
I could use a nap after today's training,
Nesta muttered. And Gwyn chuckled her agreement. Nesta set her tea on the low table before the couch.
All right, let's try it.
I memorized the steps, so I'll lead us through it, Gwyn offered. Nesta snorted.
Of course you did.
Gwyn playfully smacked her on the shoulder. Learning is my job, you know.
You'd have memorized this information anyway.
Fair enough. Gwyn laughed, finishing her own tea and then sitting up straight. Get into a comfortable seated position, alert, but at ease.
I don't even know what that means,
Gwyn demonstrated, scooting until her spine touched the back cushions, feet flat on the floor, hands lightly resting on her knees. Nesta copied the position. Gwyn surveyed her, then nodded. Now, take three deep breaths, in through your nose for a count of six, out through your mouth for a count of six. After you finish the third breath, close your eyes and keep breathing. Nesta obeyed. Inhaling and exhaling for that long required more concentration and effort than she expected. Her breathing was too loud to her ears. Each breath seemed out of sync with Gwyn's. Had she taken two breaths? Or three? Or four? I can feel you overthinking this, Gwyn murmured. Close your eyes and keep breathing. Take five breaths. Nesta did. Without anything to visually distract her, she figured her breathing would be easier to track. It wasn't. Somehow her mind just wanted to wander off. She told herself to focus on the count, on timing each breath and keeping a tally of how many she'd taken. And yet she found herself thinking of the couch cushions, her cooling tea, her still damp hair.
How many breaths had it been?
I think I'm losing my mind, Nesta muttered. Gwyn shushed her.
Now, let your breathing steady and focus on the sounds around you. Acknowledge them, then let them fade away.
Nesta did. To her left, she could make out shuffling feet and whispering robes. Who was walking through the stacks? What book were they? Focus. Let the sounds go. Someone was walking nearby. She marked it, and with an exhale, sent the thought floating away. To her right, Gwyn's breathing remained steady. Gwyn was probably good at this. Gwyn was good at everything, actually. It didn't irk her, though. For whatever reason, Nesta wanted to crow about her friend to anyone who'd listen.